It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet busters. It is once more time to come out of your closets and start really living your most authentic self. I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the Coming Out Lounge and the Coming Out Coach. And today, I just kind of thought we'd do something slightly different. It's been a while since we had we always have real raw conversations on this show. But this one, I'm just going to have a chat with a guy that I met through my PFLAG organization, where we do a lot of speaking at colleges and universities. And we're going to just have a real raw conversation about what it's like to be gay men, gay fathers, having been in the closet and been married. We're going to just do some of this conversation guy to guy. But before we dive in, let me just kind of give you a little bit of insight about Doyle. He got married pretty young. It was his senior year of college that he got married to his wife, and they lived in Iowa and then moved to British Columbia. They were married for 27 years. They've got two children, a boy that's 35 and a daughter that's 34. And he's kind of just moved through life after divorce. He's been through a few jobs, and now he's actually currently working on a one-man show, which is really exciting. We're going to talk some about that. He's been involved in the school administration, and he's also done just a lot of different things. So we're going to touch on each of these different aspects and how coming out and being your own gay man really gets touched by the different things that you have going on in your life. So I just want to welcome to the show Doyle Smeans. Welcome, Doyle.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Hey, I appreciate it too, man. And I'm just, you know, I'm really excited to hear more about your one-man show. But before we dive into that, let's just kind of, you know, do some quick delving into, you know, your life about coming out. And you came out somewhat later in life. How old were you when you came out?
50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
27 years I was married.
Wow. But for 50 years, you were still questioning who you were, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question I get often, and I know that those of us who have been in the closet get that question, well, when did you know or did you know?
Yep.
And I did know, and it's so different today. I'm so happy. I know we have a long ways to go, and I've also gotten involved with PFLAG just recently and hearing conversations and the new frontier with the transgender community. But it's so different in the late 60s and early 70s. Mm-hmm. And growing up in a small town of 100 people in Iowa, being gay wasn't exactly something that you talked about. Didn't know anyone, probably knew someone who was gay, but it certainly wasn't talked about. And so, you know, growing up, you just kind of have that small town mindset and very limited perspective. And then came from a very religious family as well. Mm-hmm. So had that in combination, and then lots of family expectations, six of us in the family, and this, the oldest boy and the second oldest child. So lots of factors. Yeah. So did I know? Yeah, I knew that something was off. If you'd asked me if I was gay, I don't know if I would have said yes, but I knew something was off.
Well, I think this is pretty common, and especially for those of us who kind of did come into the world in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. It was something that we could kind of put our finger on. We could only see it in public in the very extremeness of life. I mean, for me, my dad's oldest brother was gay, and he lived in San Francisco with his partner. And that was kind of the only thing I knew about what gay was, but it wasn't ever really talked about. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I'm recording the audio portion of my book this week as we're doing this podcast, and I'm in the chapters where I kind of talk about my uncle and his partner being part of the family, but yet the things we didn't talk about. It was like, okay, it's there, but we sure the heck didn't talk about it. And it sounds like that's kind of what was going on in your world as well.
Yeah, very definitely. I mean, I didn't, unlike you, I didn't know anybody who was out gay. Mm-hmm. And really, the only version of gay I had was stereotype of guys who were very effeminate. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, I'm not that.
Yeah.
So I must not be.
Right.
But I still had the feelings for guys and lots of doubts when I got married. But I just thought, well, it's cold feet. Or coming from a religious perspective, I just prayed that God would take the thorn away from me. And, mm-hmm. you know, people in the church would say, well, the Apostle Paul had a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what it was, but, you know, he lived with that. So it's that kind of stuff that I fought against rather than just accepting.
So when you say you knew you had these feelings for men, take me a little bit deeper into that. What was that like for you?
Well, I acted on some of them growing up in high school, but, you know, then you think, well, it's just a phase, and I'll get through it. And I think when I got married, that's what I thought. I thought, well, this will be the end of it because now I'm going to be married and that stuff's all behind me. I'm not experimenting, quote unquote, anymore.
Right.
But it wasn't. Those feelings still were there. And it becomes about managing. And I think of how exhausting that process is of managing your emotions. And I really like what you said about being your authentic self, because as I've been working on this show and as I've been thinking about things, really, I think that's what it is when you can be authentic, be who you are and who you were meant to be. I tell people I feel better today than I did 10 years ago because it's exhausting trying to keep up facade and trying to be who you're not.
And I think for most of us who are hiding in the closet that this exhaustion piece really does weigh on us, but we don't in the moment realize how exhausting it really is. I think it's the aftermath of, oh my gosh, as soon as I start being honest with myself and honest with others, even in the pain of having to do that at times, which is, you know, it's hard in and of itself to finally say, okay, this is who I am. But if I were to weigh on a scale, which is more difficult, to be honest about who I am or to continue to hide, man, the kind of exhaustion and pain that it takes to hide far outweighs the coming clean and being really, really true.
It's like, you know, we were talking earlier and you said, well, is there anything that's off limits? Well, I'm a pretty open book and I always have been, but there was always one topic and one secret, and that was my orientation. And I guarded that with everything that I could, that I knew to do, and then having to act the part.
Right.
And, you know, there were just so many like little things. For example, my ex-wife would say to me, I wish you were more affectionate. I'd say, okay, now be more affectionate. I'd last for a couple of days and then I'd fall off the wagon. Mm-hmm. When I got my first boyfriend, he said to me, look, if you don't keep your hands off of me, I'm going to cut your hand off because it was just so natural. Mm-hmm. It felt so natural to be affectionate towards him. And with my ex-wife, it was more forced. And,
I think this is interesting that you brought up the word natural. I can't remember in the last 10 or 15 shows that somebody has actually used that terminology, but it's so true how it's just natural, you know, it's natural to be in it. And again, I don't want people to think, oh, this is all just about the sexual piece.
No,
it's about the intimate piece. It's about how we emotionally connect. It's all so much more natural than being the other way.
Yeah, because that's also a question if people know me or they feel comfortable that they ask me, well, what about the sex? Because there are some gay guys, if you said, I'll give you $1 million to have sex with a woman, they say, no, keep your $1 million. There's no way I would do it or could do it. And I was able to have a sex relationship with my ex-wife, and we actually had a decent sex life. But the difference when I had a boyfriend, I'm not talking about the random hookup stuff, but when I actually had a boyfriend, and that's what you're talking about, is that emotional connection that's much deeper than people think, oh, it's just about the sex. It isn't. It's about the physical, for sure, but there's an emotional depth to that relationship that I had not experienced until that point.
Yeah, and I think that's a piece that most of us, when we finally come around the bend, come out of the closet, whatever these metaphors we use to talk about this, when we finally go through that experience and go, okay, this is what it's really meant to be, that's when we wake up to the reality of how we live in this. So I'm a little curious because you kind of live in what I would consider a very gay, somewhat mecca. You live in Long Beach, California.
Right.
So there's a lot of gays and lesbians. It's a very open and, for the most part, open and welcoming community. I'm curious because I don't live in one of those areas, but I work with people from all over the world. But what I'm curious about is, do you still see this happening in our community where there's, you know, I know there's a lot of people our age, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, who've done this, come out of the closet late in life. Are you seeing this in the younger generation in your community, like in the late 20s, early 30s, where people have tried to do the marriage thing and then they said, oh, can't do it?
My experience is no. I just, I've seen young people come out at much earlier ages and be free. And again, organizations like PFLAG, where there's a safe environment, parents, I mean, I was astounded. I didn't really know what to expect, but when I went to the meeting and there's parents there without their children who are trying to figure out how to be supportive, and I thought, oh my goodness, do those kids know what a blessing they have in those parents who are trying to figure out the right way to support their child and to help them come out or to be who they're meant to be? So I'm seeing in this community, at least, young people coming out earlier, acknowledging who they are. And I don't think it's that way everywhere. Certainly when I go back to Iowa, I feel like, okay, it's very different.
I think it is very different. And I, on occasion, do run into someone who's a little bit in their late 20s, early 30s, who's taking that journey of, you know, being in a heterosexual marriage and then realizing. But I have to say the frequency is less and less now.
Yeah.
I will caveat that by saying, you know, it depends on the area of the country that they're from,
Right. Whether
that is the case. So as you've come through your own journey and, you know, gone through a divorce and everything, was the divorce was your coming out the reason for the divorce, or was there something else that led to the divorce and then you came out?
No, my ex-wife confronted me in August and she said, you know, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to tell me the truth and I have some evidence.
Hmm.
And at that point, Rick, when she asked me, I was so tired. Our relationship wasn't great for 10 years. We both just soldiered on because, again, family values and a church community. And I was a principal at a Christian school and all of these, you know, community expectations. But I was so tired of our relationship, and mostly I was tired of lying. And I was, like, exhausted. You know, 27 years, I mean, people, if you say to somebody, people applaud when you're married 25 years now, you know. And I went on, and it's a question that I've really asked myself. Why 27 years? Why did I go on? And I think some of it is rooted in guilt, mm-hmm. and fear, and a lot of fear about what's going to happen to me. And when I did come out, almost everything that I had imagined would happened.
Yep.
So, but, you know, back to your question, yeah, she confronted me, and I just decided I'm not going to fight it anymore. I'm just going to tell her the truth. And then it was just a big blow up, and the dark night of the soul.
So I'm assuming, based on what you just said, it was a big blow up. And then you said everything that you imagined did happen. Take us a little bit further in what that imagination that became reality was. What really went on after this all came out in the open?
Well, I talk about some of it in my show, but my job was on the line at the Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up resigning from that position. Friends who, you know, didn't know how to process it. Because here's the thing. I think I've said before that when I told my children, I thought at the time that I told them that it was difficult because I was telling them I was gay. And later on, I realized that it was difficult because I was telling them a lie. I had been living a lie. And when you live a lie that long, it calls into question everything.
Yeah.
So I think some friends had difficulty from a religious perspective accepting it. We love you, but.
Yep.
And that whole thing. So I lost friends. I lost a job. Siblings were I love you, but, with the exception of a couple of them. And so there were all these things that I had imagined that were going to happen. No work, no friends. I'm going to be alone by myself. Mm-hmm. And I really did go through the dark night of the soul at one point, contemplated just ending my life.
Which I think is very common. I mean, I know there were times that I thought that too. In fact, the day that, and those who've listened to this show before know this, the day that I got off the airplane, drove home from having been in London where my awakening actually really truly happened, there were four times just in that drive from Los Angeles Airport to South Orange County where I lived at the time where I literally considered just turning the wheel in front of four different semi trucks going, it would be so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, it would be so much easier. But I think this piece that you so eloquently brought up about, you know, persevering through and knowing, you know, you got to get through this and that there's everything under the sun going on is just another piece of encouragement for those that are out there that you can and will get through this.
Yeah.
But you have to believe that yourself as much as anybody.
Here's the thing that I did when I was in my lie. I told no one and I kept the secret to myself and I didn't reach out. So when I came out to my friends, I came out to my family. I reached out. And that's what becomes so critical, I think, is to reach out to find those one or two trusted people that are going to hold space for you, be present for you, not judge you, and just hold you. And that's what my good friends in Canada did and my sister in San Francisco did for me. They just held space for me and they just held me. And that's the thing, I think, that when you're coming through this really dark spot, don't shut yourself off. Yeah. Reach out, reach out.
Well, I think that's kind of like what I call those tweetable moments from our podcast, is when someone says something like what you just said, is that come out and reach out. It's so powerful, because we can easily, quote unquote, come out of the closet and then go isolate right back in a closet again because of everything that's happening. The holding space piece also is very powerful, Doyle, that you brought up, because I believe, to me, the holding space, it's a twofold sort of scenario. First of all, you need to hold space for yourself.
Yes.
Also, actually, I guess it's almost threefold. Hold space for yourself. Find people who can hold space for you. But then simultaneously, and this is the harder piece, because when people are like telling you you're going to go to hell and that you're a son of a bitch and you've just ruined your life and all this stuff, the hardest piece is to hold space for them to have that process as well.
Right.
And that's the more difficult one. I think it is. I mean, sometimes I argue with myself, is that more difficult, or is it more difficult to hold space for yourself? Because for so many years, you've been holding space for everybody else and going, okay, I'm going to do everything they want. Now suddenly you're faced with, okay, now how do I flip this back around and hold some space for myself so that I can grow through this, which is what it's all about.
Exactly.
So you've been working on your one-man show, which it sounds like a lot of this is in the show. So why don't you give us a little side of what that show is all about?
Well, I've been thinking about doing this for several years. Someone asked me, you know, how long have you been working on it? And I said, a lifetime.
Right.
One of my majors in college was theater. I love performing. I've gone to some of the Moth competitions with storytelling. And that kind of inspired me. Like, what if I told a series of stories and just drew people a picture of my life? And then through that journey, the director friend that I'm working with, she asked me the other day, she said, you need to decide why you're telling this story. Why does it matter? And I've been thinking about it. Why does it matter? And I'm not a person who's out to save the world. I don't even know that I'm, maybe I'm out to inspire others, but I think I want to tell a story because it's fun for me to tell the story, and that it's a way to show people that you can stand up for yourself, and you don't just have to stand up. You can stand tall for yourself. And I think the underlying thing is, again, I'll go back to what you said at the beginning, authenticity. Yeah. Authenticity trumps everything. I've been thinking about this as I've been working on the show, and especially with PFLAG, when we go out to communities, it doesn't matter whether it's your sexual orientation. For a lot of people, they're not living their authentic life because they're in a job they hate and it's not what they were meant to do. Is there any difference between that and being in a closet? It's not. You're in an economic closet or a work closet.
Sure.
So allowing yourself to be authentic. Who are you? And be that person. So that is a little bit of what I'm trying to get out with the show.
Well, I think it's really powerful, too, when you can bring these sort of things to the public in a way that reflects who you are as your own person, but begin to see the bigger picture of what the message truly is. And as you were talking, one of the things that always comes up in my mind is authenticity can only happen when you're confident enough to be authentic.
Yep.
And that's a tough one. That is probably the toughest thing, because we're so used to, as humans, hearing, oh, you can't be that, or you can't do that, or don't do that, or whatever it is. This is just kind of, you know, I've often wondered what it would be like just for one day to like be on a busy street, or, and you know, in a college setting or wherever there's like lots of people, and have a really high power frequency microphone to pick up on conversations and count how many times people say, you can't, you shouldn't, you know, just to see, because my gut feeling says we would hear more of that than the positive, you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
And I think this is where the closet stories do become, it's a human existence story. It's not just those of us that are hanging in the closet.
Yeah, I really like that. The human existence.
Well, it is. So I'm assuming that, you know, lots of different pieces of the show come from your own personal experience. So I'm curious, how has the journey been as a parent who came out of the closet late in life? Because your kids would have been basically adults when you came out.
They were both married, and my ex-wife insisted on a meeting. She was far from an angel, so she had her own stuff, but she said, well, when we tell the kids we're going to get divorced, you have to tell them you're gay. And I said, well, which one of your transgressions are you going to admit? And she picked the lesser of them. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter to me at that point. I was just like, I'm going to get out. But to have that conversation was a difficult thing because I didn't know how they were going to react. And, of course, they were shocked. My son didn't believe it. He said, Dad, you're making this up. And I said, no, son, I wouldn't make something like this up. I'd make up something else, but not this. But it's been a journey with them, both in religious communities. My son's in the same conservative church that I went to, and my daughter is in a more progressive church. And I think it's easier sometimes for girls. My son has sort of a sexual orientation by association mindset, maybe. Mm-hmm. Oh, if your dad's gay, then maybe you are too.
Right.
And that's just, you know, his not lack of knowledge or exposure or anything like that. So, but we have a good relationship on a certain level.
Yeah.
There's certain things that we don't talk about. And I have just always tried to stay in a very loving space to my children and just tried to say to them, I can tell them 1,000 things, but I have one opportunity, and that is to live a life that's joyful, happy, fulfilled, and I'm going to use the word again, authentic. And when I can give that to my children, whatever they think about my sexual orientation, whatever they're going to say when they're at the funeral, they're not going to be able to say, well, he was inauthentic.
Right.
And so that's, I've just stayed loving. I'm not having big confrontations like, why aren't you this or why aren't you that? I'm just taking very gently, moving steady with my life, letting them know what I'm doing, keeping them informed about stuff. If they want to have a conversation, I do. If they don't, that's fine too, because that's their journey.
I think this is a key critical piece that you're bringing up, which I kind of alluded to earlier about giving people space to progress, you know, to progress through this. But it is about each of us being on our journey. And too often, and I love my gay brothers and sisters, and I love the movements and the strides we're making, but sometimes I wonder if we lose sight of just giving people this ability to be on their journey. We get so caught up in, you know, our rights and everything, which, as we should be trying to ensure equality. But in that, sometimes I just think we don't give people the space to be on their journey too, and to accept. And I think you've just modeled this really beautifully, that you will have conversations and other conversations you won't have, because it doesn't get anybody anywhere. And until somebody else can come in their own journey into how they feel about a gay parent or someone being gay, whatever it is for them, there's nothing we can really do except, and this is my caveat to this, except to model that we ourselves are living our best life in our journey and showing and manifesting that out to the world.
Yes, and that's exactly, you said it exactly, that's the testimony.
It is the testimony.
Your life is your testimony. And if you're miserable after coming out and you are a shell of a person, or you're half the person, or you haven't taken the time, you mentioned therapy, and I think I was listening to a couple other podcasts you were talking with about therapy, and I went through therapy. But it's about living a full life and living a good life, and that's what you have to give to other people. At the end of the day, your words, we speak thousands of words, millions of words. Yeah. We don't have them, but we have our life as an example. And that's what I want to be for my children. I want to really be honestly find balance within myself, to be authentically who I am, to be happy, to be optimistic, to be positive, to look forward to living my life. However long it is, I want to make it the best I can. And I think that speaks more powerfully than saying, well, you know what, by golly, you know, here I am, I'm 92 years old and I got something to tell you. I'm gay, I stayed married, but by God, aren't you proud of me for staying married? I used to think that was the best thing I could do, was saying, God, I soldiered on. Aren't you proud of me?
Right.
I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe soldiering on is not it. Being authentic and then being authentically happy and satisfied and joyful with the life that you have is the best.
Well, you know, I think those are the moments that when your kids can see that, or anybody for that matter, but since we're talking about our children, when they can start to see the things in you that they go, I guess Dad, Mom were right, then that's when you can see that living the life that you're intended to live really is important. I know my daughter is going through some new challenges by becoming involved in some things at school that are requiring her to have to interview and, you know, be through some pretty grueling experiences to get where she wants to go. And her first interview went okay, but it didn't result in what she wanted, but she's got a couple of other chances for the same thing to do it again. And when I asked her how it went, she said, well, you know, it went okay. I'm a little disappointed. But she goes, I need to work on my frustration and my stress levels. Hmm. And I said to her, I said, well, then you need to talk to your dad, because you've got your dad in you, and let's talk about what to help that. Yeah. And she said, yeah, I know. And she goes, I thought of you when I was, you know, when she was getting the critique back, she goes, I thought of you. And I said, well, unfortunately, I probably modeled more of that to you than I would like to admit.
Yeah.
But I'm so far enough down the road that I can see it in myself, and not that I'm perfect, but I see it. And I think those are those beautiful moments. So to that point, I think what you're modeling here today, Doyle, is the ability to, again, we brought up the word authenticity a whole lot here,
yeah.
But it's really about just being you. That's the bottom line. And if others can't embrace that, then they're just being themselves. And
yes,
that gives us the opportunity to say, that's you, I'm me, and how we move forward is how we move forward. And that may mean, as many of you have heard on this podcast before, that may mean that some people will, well, they will just not be a part of your life. They
yeah.
just won't be there any longer. I'm really curious, real quick before we wrap, because we're already, it's amazing how quickly these podcasts go, but I'm curious because I know you're also a grandfather, correct?
Yes, yes.
So I'm curious what you think will happen as this next generation starts to go through this. I have my perspective that when my kids decide to have grandkids, you know, produce grandkids for me, if they choose to, that, wow, this will be such a different conversation, because I already see it in the younger generation. But being a grandfather yourself right now, how is that going for you, and what do you see happening?
I really see it in, like, my nieces and nephews that are younger. For them, it's such a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for my siblings, but for their children, it's really a non-issue. And for their children's children, it's really a non-issue. So I think it will be not a big deal to them.
Yeah.
For one thing, they did not know the pre-Doyle.
Yeah.
They only know the post-Doyle.
Yeah.
So for them, they don't know me any other way. And so I think it'll be easier for them. You know, of course, they're being raised in certain environmental cultures and influences that come in. So, you know, those things will be there. I anticipate it'll be a much easier, and they'll be much more accepting probably than their parents.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we wrap up, what's the name of your one-man show?
Truth Be Told.
Great.
It's going to be 90 minutes. Oh, my goodness, Rick, I have to memorize 90 minutes. Fortunately, it's my story, so
right.
It's easier. But it's going to be 90 minutes, no intermission, straight through. One of the other things that I have thought about the show is what I want people to do is I want them to feel. I want them to feel. So when you come, I want you to have laughed. I want you to have thought. I want you to have cried. And I want you to have had a really good time and just leave the show feeling inspired and glad that you came.
Awesome. And we'll have all the information up on the show page for the show. In case you didn't catch all that, it will be produced in Long Beach, California. So those of you who are out of state, hey, if you want to come join us, great. For those of you that are local, we'd love to see you at the show. And then the last thing I always do, Doyle, at the end of every podcast is to ask one question, which I won't be surprised if you kind of repeat something you've already said. But what would be one great piece of advice you'd love to leave a listener with that could potentially help them as they're either in the closet, thinking about coming out, post coming out? What would be something you'd like to leave with a listener right now?
Love yourself enough to accept who you are and where you are. Wherever you are, you can start from there and go somewhere. If you don't get totally out of the closet, you can take steps in the right direction. So love yourself and move in that direction of being the authentic you, because I can tell you from experience that if you reach out and have support, reach out and find people who love you, you will feel so much better than living the lie.
Absolutely. What great words of wisdom. And if you've enjoyed listening to the things that Doyle and I have brought up today, we would love to hear from you. I want to say thank you, Doyle, for being here.
Oh, thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. Those of you who listen to us on a regular basis, you know you can hop over to iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, any of those places where you download your podcasts. Always find us there. Subscribe to us. We'd love that. Share us with a friend, however you feel like it. Always appreciate the reviews as well. And if nothing else, join us on Facebook at The Coming Out Coach, or, you know, tweet me at Rick Clemens on Twitter. And again, that's at Rick Clemens on Twitter. And the hashtag for the show is hashtag The Coming Out Lounge. And finally, if you've been listening, you know my book is now out and available. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, a few other outlets. The book name is Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. It's a late bloomer's guide to coming out. Would love to have you pick up a copy, share it with someone. You can get it on Kindle and soon to be available on Audible. So just wherever you could get it, I would love to share that with you, and hopefully it will help you as you go through your own coming out journey. And as we always do at the end of each show, I encourage each and every one of you to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach and the host of the Coming Out Lounge. And gosh, I can't wait to have you all join us again in just another week. Have a great one. Bye-bye. Here's an additional show note. At the time of the taping of this interview with Doyle, his show, Truth Be Told, was scheduled to debut on April 10th, 2016, in Long Beach, California. Due to circumstances beyond Doyle's control, the production date has been pushed to a yet undetermined date. As soon as the new production date is set, you will be able to find all the information you need to purchase tickets to attend his show. So please check back frequently to this show page to get all the details.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.